Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to Coaching Coordinator Podcast. We are live from the USA Football National Conference in Orlando. In the background, you'll probably hear some noise. We have our setup here right by the live field, and we have Josh Herring from Lassiter High School, who's been on the podcast going right now talking about two-minute conversion strategies. So it's definitely an exciting day here in Orlando. I am excited to be joined by one of the foremost experts on tackling in the world, Richie Gray. Coach Gray, it's great to have you here.
Now listen, Keith, thanks very much for inviting us down, obviously, as a guest to USA Football for the whole weekend. It's just great to be here. Obviously, I've had a fair bit to do with football over the last couple of years, but just to mix with the coaches and to see what's all going on, and you know, you can't beat it in any sport. I love my collision sports, and you know, you go to these conferences and you just learn so much, and you always pick up something.
Yeah, definitely. I was excited yesterday. We spent some time talking about, really, about coaching in general and coaching technique. Actually, let me step back, Coach. Let everybody know where you're from. I know they can tell you're not from the United States,
no,
but let them know a little bit about your background here. Sorry about that.
So, you know, I'm 47 years old, from Scotland, ex-physical education teacher, then went into professional rugby union for 12 years. And then came out of that and went into, obviously, full-time professional coaching, which I was doing within that 12 years. Went to work with the Springboks in South Africa for 3 years, then the Springbok Sevens team, then back to coach my own country, Scotland. And then in that period of coaching Scotland, I was invited down to work with Miami Dolphins for the 2016 season to look at the whole area of tackle, skills development, where does skills sit in the building, alongside your strength conditioning, your coaches, your medical. And I'm now contracted to Montpellier in the south of France, in the French top 14, obviously as the contact collision. And I've just always really enjoyed collision sports. So, you know, I can remember from a very young age watching NFL on a Sunday night, Channel 4 in the UK, Dan Marino, Joe Theismann, Marcus Allen, that sort of era. Always enjoyed it, really been fascinated by the sport, just the way that it's all put together. And obviously I've coached at the highest level with rugby union, so very, very lucky.
Coach, there was a part there I'd like you to fill in. There was a gap in your coaching career where you took some time off and told me about this, and you really got deep into studying contact, specifically tackling.
Yeah, I always thought that the game, and at that time it was rugby union based, that the game was just going to become more contact. The players were stronger, they were fitter, they were faster. The schemes that everybody was playing, the systems were better, and I just knew there was going to be more contact coming into it. So I actually took a step back, and I think the rest of my sort of peers thought I was mad because I was a forwards coach, and I said, no, I'm just going to go and look at contact collision, the tackle area especially. And I spent about 2 years doing that, and then I developed equipment that's used all over the world now in rugby union, pretty much changed the way that the game's coached. And just to look at, just to break it down and start again, really, I just wanted to rip it to bits and then build it back up. And some of the things that you discovered and found out over that 2 years that you've now then gone to implement in the three codes, rugby union, rugby league, and in football. You know, I was just maybe lucky. It was a gamble in some ways, but I always knew the sports were going to go that way. Then all of a sudden in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, they've all just hit this wall of, you know, the health and safety side of things, youngsters in the game, what are we doing for them? It was perfect timing, really. I've always believed in performance first. I know that health and safety is talked about a lot in the area that I look at, but I've always believed if you can get youngsters at any age to perform better, it will have a huge effect on the way the game's portrayed and the health and the safety benefits on the back of that.
When we look at your game of rugby and what's going on in Europe, and we look at football in the United States, there's some parallels in the issues that both games are facing. And the answer, you know, it seemed to be, for a long time it was, we're going to invent a better helmet. But now the focus really is on, we're going to take contact out of the game until the age of 12 or 14 or something like that. In fact, there's some state legislations now in the United States who are pushing for laws that will ban tackle football until 12 or high school or something like that. As a coach of the game, as somebody who really understands deeply the techniques and the skills that need to be developed, is this a wise thing to do in your opinion?
Yeah, it's also been mentioned in rugby union as well. So as you say, Keith, both sports are in a very, very similar position. I think just to go back, it's funny, there is a crossover with both the sports, but I've always said, and I think this is why I was so lucky to work, you know, with the Dolphins for that season, that rugby's rugby and football's football. I always say that as a quote. They're very, very different sports, you know. And I think, you know, you hear the kind of rugby fraternity saying, yes, you know, we could come in there and we could make such a huge difference. I think there's certain techniques that can cross over, but both the sports are very, very different. And I think everyone has to understand that, you know, the speed and the power of that 5 to 7 second play in football compared to the minute and a half, 2 minutes of rugby union. So first and foremost, yes, there are slight crossovers, but both sports are very different. To go back to answer your question, we've had the same thing thrown up in rugby union as well. Do we just don't teach any form of tackling at all to certain ages? And I would say that there's a number of different ways of teaching it. You know, you've got to make sure that throughout the youngster's progression, whatever age that is, that there is some form of technique happening over and over again. So the muscle memory, and it's sinking in there that they can understand what is needed when it comes to the time when they're maybe going to go into the contact sport. And remember, there's so many choices now. Both sports have got a number of choices that youngsters can make to what form of game they want to play. But it doesn't mean to say that you go bone on bone, full contact in tackle and in other collision techniques within both the sports. There are other ways of getting there. You know, I think it would actually be detrimental in some ways that all of a sudden a youngster at the age of, say, 14 or 15 goes straight into contact tackle technique without ever doing it. You know, so there are different ways to get there. And I think to ban it completely wouldn't be the correct thing to do. You've got to keep reinforcing technique, and as the youngster grows and matures through the years, that technique is a sound basis for then the choice they might make later on in life.
Yeah, before we got going here, we were talking about performance, and you're talking with Scott Peters,
yeah,
who has his contact system with us, the tip of the spear contact system. A lot like you, really focused on teaching better technique. You know, Scott made the point that, you know, players don't get excited about safety. Hey, guys, let's go out and be safe. You know, you don't hear that. They want to go out and perform. But when we look at proper technique in football, tackling, you know, specifically with what you're doing, contact with what Scott's doing, blocking and defeating blocks, done correctly, the result is you have safety through superior technique.
Exactly.
Do you agree?
Yes, exactly. I would agree 100%. And I think, you know, all the, I get most of, so for example, I'm at Montpellier Rugby Club, top 14. It's top of the league at the moment in the French leagues. And, you know, every week I'll get sent clips of maybe little injuries that have happened and bits and pieces. And, you know, when you look at them, it's pretty much the poor technique of a player that will get them injured. And, you know, I remember when I came down to do some work with the Dolphins in 2016, you know, they were great working with guys like Adam Gaze and Matt Burke, who's now the defensive coordinator there, Vance Joseph, who's now at Denver. They pretty much just gave me about 100 clips and said, listen, just tell us exactly what you see. And when you really broke them down from maybe somebody outside looking in, there were so many things that we weren't doing correctly, you know. And it's not just in football, it's in a lot of the collision sports. If that basis and the foundations, the building blocks of really sound technique aren't coached properly, then it's going to catch up with you later on in life. And I think, as we discussed yesterday, our sports are very system orientated now. Defensive system, attacking system. A lot of time is spent on the development of the system. How much time compared is spent to the development of technique for the individual within the system? All of a sudden, it's horrendous percentages. You know, we all say we're doing it, but there's no actually dedicated skills department in many of these big clubs that I go around the world. There'll be a phenomenal strength and conditioning component, there'll be an excellent medical component, you'll have the coaches doing the game. Where's the skills department? And usually it's an add-on, or it's 7 to 8 to 10 minutes at the start of a session, pretty much seen as an activation before we go to the system. Maybe we're missing something here, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's been when the penny's dropped in some ways for a lot of the places I visit. I'll say, where's the skills department? And the classic, Keith, is this: we buy players in and we expect to buy the finished article. You know, we pay millions of dollars or we pay millions of pounds for these collision-based sport players. This is the finished article. And then you find out that maybe what has been done to improve that player's ability over the last 2 or 3 years, well, all that's been happening is he's been in a system. He's not actually looked at the individual technique of that player. So I think we've got a huge amount of work to do here.
Absolutely. And we look at any skill, right? And we talked about this yesterday, that for a long time, you saw in your sport that the skill was being worked, you know, it was just the kicking.
Yeah.
You know, in football, same thing. The kickers, punters go out and do their thing. The quarterbacks will go out and throw.
Yep.
And the linemen or linebackers or some of the running backs, those guys go and lift weights and get bigger, faster, stronger. We develop them physically, but their skills take a break for, you know, 6, 7, 8 months before we're able to start to develop those again.
Yeah.
And it's like, the value of those skills maybe has been displaced in this whole process, that we need to look at not how we do less, but how we train the correct body positions, the postures, you know, the footwork, so many things that actually can be done without live contact.
Yes.
That we can work on some of those things throughout the year, throughout our training. And you had an interesting concept when you talked about, you know, high performance centers, that, you know, they're kind of compartmentalized. You have the strength and conditioning coach in there, the high performance guy. You have the athletic trainers, the medical staff in their area. You have coaches who keep to their area. Nobody crosses over there.
Yeah.
That you have to start to see those groups work side by side to develop athletes. And we talked about this in some places, there's a complete disconnect.
Yes.
Between them.
Yes.
That we have to work together. We're all developing the athlete. It all works together to be able to excel in this sport.
Yeah, I think in some ways, you know, when you look at the player, if you put player-centered approach, then that player should know that everyone round about him is working for the betterment of that player. You know, so for example, on the touchline when he makes that great tackle and, you know, he stops the yard that wins the game, and it's, you know, the final, the hooter goes and that's it all over, there could be the conditioner, the skills coach, the medic, all as delighted as each other because they've all had a huge part to play in that happening. And I think it's just maybe to look at a different way of how we run our high performance systems. And I keep coming back to skills. It's like I'm standing on the chair, you know, punching the air here. But skills development and the whole importance of skills in and around that high performance system is absolutely huge, you know. So I'll always keep pushing it. The thing is, though, you then got to have coaches that can coach the skill. And I think a lot of coaches nowadays, because there's such a big turnover in coaching, you know, we're all in pro sport, we know what it's about. If the results don't come, then people are going to go. So the next thing the coach does the minute he comes in is he brings his system in, and it's system, system, system. And then there might be a turnaround in coach 2 years later, system, system, system. When's the actual fundamentals, you know, technique being coached? And there should be a program that follows the player however long he's at that franchise or club or union. It should just follow him through his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it should literally be like a school grade that goes from year one to year two to year three. There should be a plan for that player, and the player should know, you know what, I'm here at this club and they're trying to make me a better player. You know, I've improved as a player being at this club. How good would that be?
That's a tremendous concept. And when we think about what we're trying to do in building programs, and let's take the typical high school in the community around it, you know, bringing them and getting them to learn their systems, their offense, their defense when they're young, all good things. But we have to find a way to basically, you know, go from the youngest kids who are playing the game in that community all the way up through the senior in high school and teaching them in a similar way with the technique too. And we haven't necessarily looked at it that way.
Yeah.
We've kind of looked at, well, these are the skills we'll use with the young guys, but it's going to change here. We really have to find some universality in the techniques. And I know you and I talked about what we've done with Scott Peters.
Yes.
And that Scott stuff can be used at the youngest levels.
Yep.
We're also teaching those exact same skills in the exact same way to the elite, to the NFL.
Yep.
And the language that goes through it can be put into any system. And I think if we're going to advance this game, we need to think about that as coaches, that we kind of need to find that common language, the common techniques that kids can keep learning, even in spite of change.
Yeah.
Even in spite of maybe a new coach comes in and goes from, you know, a wing T system to a spread system, that's okay.
Yep.
These kids can still apply the same contact skills,
yep,
the blocking, defeating blocks, the tackling, avoiding tackles, that they've learned along the way. That part of the game is something we can make standard at coaches. We can work together to continue to innovate the best techniques that are going to be the safest. And that's going to help our sports moving forward.
Wouldn't it be great as a coach, knowing that you're coming into a new, say you've got the job at this college or this new franchise, knowing fine well that the fundamental skill set of your players is outstanding? So all of a sudden, that's when I can come in with my defence and my offensive system and be really confident, knowing that I've just looked at the skills plans of these players. Jeez, we've got some phenomenally skilled players here. There's been some fantastic work done with these players over the last 8 to 9 seasons. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This is the system I'm going to bring in now because it suits the skill set of that group of players. Gone. That doesn't happen very often. You know,
no.
You bring in your system and then you find out in game 3, you know, geez, you know, can this guy not do this? And it's actually, it's an absolute disgrace that if a player is at that level and he's still got a major weakness or flaw in his game, whose fault's that? Well, it's the fault of the system that they've come through. And it was good, I've caught up with Scott for the first time today, and it's funny that you've got a guy in the US and a guy from Scotland. The Scottish guy's been looking at the tackle for the last 7 or 8 years, ripped it to bits, has coached it at the highest level, and you've got Scott, who's obviously the same idea and all the principles of blocking and his contact. And both, you know, you just want to make the game better. You know, we're here for a certain amount of time. I love collision sports. I love watching them. You know, I've been involved in them myself. I love the whole game, the culture behind it. When I'm 85, 90 years old, I want to be looking back thinking, you know what, I had a chance to make a difference in that sort of 15 to 20 year block, and you know, we can be really happy with what we've done. We've moved the game on. It's in a better place than it was before I found it, you know, and I can go away and some other young guy's going to come in with some great ideas and we're going to move the game on again. So that's the key for me, you know, that's the key.
It's all about obviously innovation and staying on top of it. And I think we've learned that we can't do things anymore just because we've always done it that way. We constantly need to be looking at it. And I think as coaches, obviously, what's come to the forefront in some of the issues we faced is we certainly have to put safety at, you know, player safety at the forefront of it. And you talked in, you know, kind of your conversion in that as a coach where, you know, on Tuesdays you beat the guys up,
you know,
and you know, by Saturday,
Keith,
they're
you know,
gone.
Yeah, you know, I was one of those coaches, and you know, on that Tuesday was kind of full-on contact time, and it was a sort of egotistical way of, you know, after the session, how many guys had been sliced, you know, how many stitches had been ditched out, how many guys had destroyed ligaments, and it was like this whole sort of kind of machoism, smashing the life out of each other. But it dawned on me when I was a head coach in my young years that, you know, the only way you've got a chance of winning a game is if your best players are fit and healthy on that Saturday. And there I was on the Tuesday, you know, smashing the life out of them. Pretty much, was it for them or was it for me? You know, so we've all been there, and I'm not going to stand up and say I've done things that, you know, you're proud of. I now cringe when I think back to how I used to coach. but there are other ways of getting there. There are definitely ways of making players better, and that will have a knock-on effect in the whole safety side of the game. It's got to. Will it cure it? No, it won't, but it'll go a huge way to helping it. And there'll be other things. There'll be equipment technology. There'll be, you know, the different types of medical standards that will come in. It will make the game safer and safer and safer. The bottom line is, though, Keith, and I've always said this, and I've had many a debate, you still have a choice to make whether you step into the arena or not. That's it. You know, that's your own choice to make. But I would rather have the youngster stepping into a safe arena than an arena that didn't care and just literally had its head buried in the sand.
Absolutely. And I think that's the exciting part about this time. I know everybody worries about the future of the game. I think that it's certainly undergoing some change right now.
Yeah.
And I've started saying this years ago that ultimately the game is going to be saved by coaches. It's not going to be a new helmet. It's not going to be, you know, a return to play protocol. That's after the fact. Yeah. We need to find better ways, better techniques. And, you know, when I look at some of that, it really goes to, we talked about this, as a coach, you have to develop your eye for it. You really, you know, and I hear this from coaches on the podcast all the time, they made the mistake as a young coach of being so focused on scheme that they let maybe some of the fundamentals go, and they let, you know, the relationship part go too. And, you know, we really need to think about that part of it. We need to be more focused on the techniques and fundamentals. We need to look at how do we put more of that time in our practice, and then use what limited live amount of contact we do, save it for the test of those schemes later. Yeah. That a lot of those schemes are built around sound fundamentals, and you can probably do less and be more successful scheme-wise if you have the right techniques.
There's two things for me. One, you must make it important, and two, you must measure it. You know, I've always said that if you're going to do the skill side of things, you've got to make it important so the players understand exactly why they're doing it, and then you must measure it. Because the minute you measure something, then there's something to always progress to or to work on day after day, week after week. To go back to your point, I think we're in possibly the most important time ever in the history of collision sport, you know, and it's up to coaches. You're absolutely spot on there, and I think possibly lawmakers as well, goes hand in hand. We have got to make sure that we leave it in a better state than we found it, you know, and I love this sport. It's been good to me, you know. I just, even coming here for the weekend and you're meeting with people that, you know, there's a massive will to make it better. There's no, the minute, you know, our sports sometimes get a bad name. The collision sport world sometimes gets a bad name, but I think everybody has very, very quickly come round to, nobody had an answer. That's the thing, you know, you hear all these great debates, but there's not really ever been an answer given, and there's not one specific answer that's going to cure it, but all I can talk about is skill development, technique, skill, movement going forward, and I know that will have a huge impact on the game.
Absolutely. Coach, let's shift gears a little bit, and let's talk about your time with the Miami Dolphins. You and I were watching some film yesterday, and you're showing me the guys, you know, day one before you really did any work, and then you showed me, you taught me some things for sure. I mean, the fine points and the way you look at it is amazing. The way you detail your evaluations is amazing. But then seeing those guys 3 weeks later and what they had learned in that time and how much better they had actually become. And we're, you know, so what was amazing is we were talking about our elite players, right, in football, some of the best in the world. And they weren't quite where they needed to be before we started putting a focus on some of those things.
Yeah, you know, I was very lucky. You know, I got invited down to Miami by Wayne Diesel, who's the head of high performance, worked alongside Mike Wall, who's a O-lineman for Green Bay Packers for many years, two, you know, really good men. And you obviously had the backing of the coaches down there as well. You could just about come in and, you know, if you see something, say it. And I can always remember my first day there, the whole defensive room, and I hadn't followed the Dolphins for a number of years, so I didn't actually know who anybody was, but I can just remember saying to the guys, listen, I'll judge you on technique, and Obviously, I've developed a number of training aids over the years for rugby union. I've now developed a set of training aids for football, and they're actually quite difficult. You know, when you first have a shot on them, they're not meant to be easy, and the players were falling off of these things, and, you know, they were saying to me, you know, coach, what's going on here? I can't hit this thing. But the more you work on it, it kind of showed that. And remember, these athletes can change incredibly quickly. You know, they're phenomenally conditioned. They're sharp guys. They know what to do and how to get there quicker than maybe most. That's why they're there. All they need is just to maybe be shown some of the key principles that, listen, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, and you'll find there's a very, very quick pickup. And within about a fortnight, the difference in 3 or 4 days was incredible, because the nature of the athlete that we have in that environment is you don't want to be beaten. You know, that's why you're there. You know, you're a born winner, and you don't want to look silly in front of your mates. So it's, let's make sure I get this drill right. I don't want this Scottish guy breathing down my neck again. So, you know, it was great to see. And also for me, you must test equipment out. There's no point in developing gimmicks. They don't last long. And, you know, the players, I still keep in touch with quite a few of them, and they'll, you know, give me a shout, and I'll get a text saying we're hitting the bags today. And, you know, it's great to know. And guys like Michael Thomas and, you know, Kiko Alonso and Mike Hull and these guys, were great to work with. You know, they were excellent. So you never know. You know, I could well be back working consultancy in the NFL again. I've always enjoyed working at the highest level. I have done in rugby union and rugby league, and, you know, who knows, it might happen again.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about the gear, the equipment you've developed for training tackling. It's obviously, you have some unique things for rugby, but some of the great things now that you bring into the U.S. I think Andy Ryland told me, you know, prior to this this deal that you have struck with a manufacturer here in the United States, there were only two sets of your bags here.
We've purposely kept it. You know, I'm always a great believer in you've got to trial it and you've got to make sure it works. And, you know, I took all the stuff down to Miami in 2016, and they used it through that year. And then Denver, I've got it now. Vance Joseph's obviously up there, so they bought it, and there's a few colleges and schools have got it now, but really the official launch is pretty much here, you know, getting it out there. And there are different levels of bag, there are different weights, there's shields in there as well, but they've all been created to pretty much bring around the movement pattern that I like to see in what I class as different levels of tackle. So, you know, level one's ankle to knee, level two knee to hip, level three hip to pec. So it fits in really well with a USA football model as well, really well, you know. So there's a good crossover there, and they're the right weight. A lot of the equipment's too light, so you can't bring around a training effect on it. Also, there's grip points on them, because the biggest thing I still see in a lot of football practices is flat hands. Because most of the tackle dummies are very solid, you can't actually grip them. So very simple concepts, but they bring around the training effect very quickly, and it also means that you don't need to go bone on bone. As long as that's why I've done it. And it's the same in rugby union. I've developed 24 training aids used worldwide by some of the best players and teams. It's about creating muscle memory within the practice, but also it's about stopping us from hitting each other. You know, we don't actually need to go live as much as we used to. Most of the injury came from there. So instead of doing a 40-minute live session now, you could work for 25-30 minutes on the equipment and then maybe go live for 10 minutes and that's it. And the injury rates have completely come down. And, you know, doctors that I work with in some of the biggest teams in the world are saying, listen, this is possibly one of the best move forwards we've seen, because it's obviously making it easier for them. You can control the injury, it's not as bad as it used to be, and we're just trying to move the game forward. And that's where it is safer. You know, it's still performance, but it's a safer way of doing it, you know. So there's many ways to get to the end game without going bone on bone, you know.
Absolutely. Coach, where can our listeners, if they're interested in looking at and even purchasing your equipment for football, where can they see that?
Yeah, you can quite simply go onto just greytacklesystem.com, the website's there, and then on the website it can tell you, obviously it's manufactured and made in the US now, which is great. It's, I've always wanted to, if it's going to be a product that we're putting into football in the US, the number one thing for me was it's made in the US. So, you know, a number of places that have equipment around the world, I always make sure it's made in the country that it's going to be, you know, used in. I think it's just a good way to go, and it also, there's a feeling of it's made in the country and I want to use it. So yeah, greytacklesystem.com, go and have a look at it. It's got a lot of little videos and clips and the whole sort of methodology behind it, and then in there it can tell you exactly how you can go about ordering and where you can go. So listen, Keith, it's been great, and hopefully the start of a kind of good relationship, and just want to make the game better. That's all we want to do, and you want to make players better, and you want to enjoy the game that we've both loved for many, many years. It's given us some great memories, so
absolutely,
this should continue.
Well, Coach, definitely going to have you back on the podcast again, and we'll maybe talk about your five-fight philosophy next time. Really intrigued with that. But I really appreciate you taking time here at USA Football's National Conference, and you know, I'm excited to see what we can do moving forward.
Well, listen, Keith, thanks very much. It's been great to be here, and you know, you never stop learning.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.